forward. This is your main man foe checking once, your main man foe checking twice. What about Sifu? What you got for a check?
Funnily, yes. I'm actually cleaning my kitchen floor right now with some wax.
There you go. Sabre Martial Arts Podcast, episode 32, I think. And here we are doing some Daniel-san, doing some Karate Kid. Sifu
before you become a master teacher, you chop wood and carry water. After you become a master teacher, you chop wood and carry water.
There you go. So. In The Last Ronin, spoiler alert, you see Michelangelo. you see Michelangelo mopping the dojo floors constantly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anyway, they also, again, spoiler alert, they also hint that he may have been taught by the Ip Man. Very interesting. So anyway,
that's cool.
Yeah, it may not be, but it's sort of, well, Ip Man adjacent.
He's a time traveler, so whatever.
So yeah, that's kind of that's the vibe. So anyway, great series, by the way, TMNT, The Last Ronin. So episode 32, we're going to pick up a conversation that we actually said we were going to do last week. 2 weeks ago, we said we were going to do this conversation last week. Last week, we did a different conversation. This week, we're going to pick that conversation up again. If you're still following me, thank you. Well, because I kind of
Code is also
track.
A time traveler.
Yeah. So we're going to talk a little bit more about how Alan and I have formulated our versions of form 5, 6, and 7, or forms 5, 6, and 7, I should say. And we will talk a little bit about both variations of form 5, which would be Shien and Jamso. We will talk a little bit about both variations of Nimon and Jarkai, form 6. And then we will talk a little bit about both variations of form 7, Vapid and Juyo. And if you pronounce any of these words differently than I do, congratulations. It's okay to be wrong. And welcome back to another episode. No, in all seriousness, they're made up words. Pronounce them however you like. You're not offending me.
That's true. Don't at me.
I've heard it all too. And it's all good.
So, I assure our listeners that I will be pronouncing at least a couple of those words differently as well.
I was going to say, I'm not expecting Alan or myself to adjust to the other either, because these last forms, especially, like, there's a lot of ways you could say these. Far be it from me to tell you how to say a made up word. So, before we do that, really quickly, Alan, give us the old lowdown on upcoming Saber Mayhem.
Saber Mayhem, we are going to have a grand conference, basically. I'm trying to get as many leaders of Saber organizations as possible to actually show up. And we made it even easier to show up because we're going to do, for the people that can't be there in person, we're going to have a Zoom room for them to join. And then they can give their 2 cents, you know, raise their hand, and it will be hopefully a grand time, and no actual fights will happen.
Yeah.
But the idea is to make it so that if you want to highlight your organization and kind of give the world, because we will record this too for the podcast, give the world, like, hey, this is our flavor of lightsabers. Please come and join us if you're in the area, or, you know, maybe create one of your own satellites using our system. Then that's kind of the vibe. We want to share and celebrate your saber organization. Not necessarily tell you you're wrong, unless, of course, it's super dangerous, in which case we'll be like, sorry, that's not our vibe. Goodbye.
Or if you pronounce Mace Windu's form 7 super stupid, like, just kidding. Just kidding.
Right. And that's why there's numbers.
Right. And animals too. Like if you really just want to get after
and
it.
Animals and mm-hmm. and also the way of blah blah blah.
Right, right, right.
For each one of these,
determination
right?
is easier to say than she or shy or she I cho.
Yeah.
She e cho.
by the way, coming soon. I'm going to go ahead and give a spoiler. Coming soon will be our. Lightsaber Forms shirts and jerseys.
Oh yeah,
they're being.
So I'm guessing you got
right
those files I sent you, and you were able to use some.
Yeah, yeah. So I gave them to my wife, and she's going to employ. She's going to employ her army of artists to see if there's anything you know
usable
else we want. Yeah, well, anything we want to do with them besides just shirts.
Sure.
Because we could put them on hats. We could
stickers,
put them on
coasters. Yeah.
Yeah,
delicious.
So there will
dog
be
bandanas.
That, right? There is actually a link that Fode can provide in the description for our duelist shirts.
Oh
those
yes,
are
thank you for reminding me.
There.
I will make sure I duelist that.
Yeah, and if you are in the Saber Martial Arts. Foundation and you want a judge shirt, those are going to be special for our actual
yes
Martial
please
Arts
reach out
members.
To us directly to do that. I will give you the link as long as you are in fact somebody who is an approved judge in your club or organization or whatever.
Right.
And that's you guys know me already, so send me a message yeah. if you would like a SMA official judge and or duelist shirt, but the duelist link I will provide in the description.
Yeah.
And full disclosure, we make like what a couple bucks. Alan makes a couple bucks, which goes right back into Saber Martial Arts anyway. So
yes, and keep an eye out for. I am going through the paperwork and the approval process of our Patreon. We will create one of those here soon.
Awesome.
Probably
and,
like.
There's a good chance
a dollar
we may,
a month to get start to get started, and then we'll have different tiers from there.
There's a good chance we may have some other sponsorships in the somewhat near future.
Yep.
And or special pricing options for certain martial arts companies that we trust, nerd companies that we trust, apparel companies that we use, etc. So if you do want a judge shirt, send me an email, smaoutreach@gmail.com. If you would like to get a duelist shirt, I will try and make sure I put that link in the description. And if you are not actually a Saber Martial Arts club member and you order a duelist shirt, like it's not the end of the world. We don't care. But please send us a message and we'd love to include you. So the last thing is if you would like to participate in our chat, on Saber Mayhem at the end of May, a day or two after the original release date of Star Wars, then send an email to mastervenable@gmail.com, correct, or at phoenixsaber.com.
Thank you.
That's what it is. mastervenable@phoenixsaber.com, S-A-B-E-R for any of our European friends listening. And
it will be in the afternoon. I feel like the time zones.
That's a Sunday afternoon. What was the date again? One more time.
So May 26th.
Yeah, the day
Sunday
after
afternoon.
The original Star Wars release.
And it is basically going to be around noon for that in Los Angeles. So
noon Pacific. So that would
yeah,
be
so
3 p.m.
Please,
Eastern.
Please make sure you understand the time zones. If you're
and
try to
that's a loose projection at the moment. We'll make sure we nail that all down. But yeah, if you send Alan an email, let him know who you are. Let him know which club or organization you represent, or if you're just representing yourself. Kind of a little bit about your Saber experience, if you have any, or even if you're just a nerd and you're interested. And how to get in contact
especially
with you.
If you are
right?
nerd and interested.
Yeah, obviously you'll have an email, but we'll need some sort of phone number at some point or a Zoom handle or something along those lines. So, yeah, get in contact with Alan and he will apprise you of the next steps. Awesome. You ready to get into some talk? Let's get into it.
Yeah, let's do it.
So we're starting with my personal favorite. Personal favorite form. Everybody's heard me say it 2 million times if you're the type who's listening to this show, which there's about 7 of you out there, so thank you. But we're talking about 4 and 5, and that my personal favorite is Gemso, the Gemso variation, which I think is the one that most people are familiar with. Some would just say, you know, the Anakin Skywalker form if you just want to be real cut and dry about it. Also, Luke Skywalker, and you see that in the end of The Mandalorian, how adept he was at Form 5. And let's just talk about Gemso first. So, Alan, sure. why don't you start with your Gemso? Give me a little bit of an insight into either, for anybody who didn't listen 2 weeks ago, first of all, go back and listen, episode 30. And
we'll be here when you get back.
Yeah. But we basically talked about some of the martial arts styles, weapon styles, even just outside influences that had nothing to do with martial arts that have influenced our curricula or formulation of the 7 form. So in this case, Gemso, give us a little bit of the background of how yours came to be.
Of course. So Gemso is... Well, we should probably
perseverance
explain
form.
Like, yeah, we should probably explain about the perseverance form, like what it was based on in that Fight Saber article, right?
Yeah.
And expounded upon in The Way of the Jedi.
Yeah. Let's do some keywords. One would be strength, like, and not just strength in the spiritual sense, but in this particular form, strength in the physical sense, which in most other saber forms, I don't want to say it works against you, but you're not really like physical strength is not taught to be a necessity for any of the other saber forms the way it is for Form 5.
Right. So for Form 5, what I did to go into the Gemso part, which is actually different than what we do in our other Form 5, our Xian, right? For Gemso, I went and looked at the biggest swords available because they require strength.
Correct.
So for our Form 5 at Phoenix Saber Academy, we teach Fagwa Broadsword. We talked about that 6 foot tall broadsword. We look at Scottish Claymore.
Correct. That's one of the ones I've used as well. Yeah, and we look just to throw Claymore in with larger than long sword European swords. So like Claymore, Montante, Zweihander. There are others. But I would say any two-handed European sword that's longer than maybe 30 inches of blade, longer than 32 inches of blade maybe.
Right. So I looked a lot at that stuff and decided because in Phoenix Saber Academy, we have a bunch of different ways of teaching. So the first way is by going through and doing forms. We actually create kata or dulon, you know, for people to do. Velocities, whatever your word that you use.
Yeah,
for,
and some of these terms are fluid. I know that, like in San Diego Sabres, they use the term velocity differently than I do in DE Saber Martial Arts, which might be even a little different than how you use it. I'm not sure, but yeah, it's all generally pre choreographed sequences to educate.
Yeah, and usually, with us, we do a form, and then we do the other side of the form, which is like how you block against it, sort of thing.
Yep.
And so
that's something that I've employed as well with my especially younger students.
Yeah. So for the first 3 forms, that's what we do. Once we get to Ataru, all bets are off. yeah. Because there's not really, besides get out of the way, there's not really a block against like somebody doing a somersault at you.
Yeah, we talked about that in the 2 episodes ago. And actually, I think we talked about that in pretty good detail. So definitely check out that later portion of the episode if you're interested in that Ataru lack of defense. How do you deal with that Same thing with Suresu. How do you deal with lack of offense? Right.
Right.
But form five.
Yeah.
Is oddly defensive
form.
And offensive all at once. Yeah. Right. Counteroffensive form. Exactly. Yeah, especially so Gemso, in my opinion.
Yeah. So this is the counteroffensive form. This is the one that, basically can absorb or deflect an attack in order to come in with a devastating counterattack. Mm-hmm. And that's mm-hmm. how I tried to look at it. And the open hand, because we're using a lightsaber.
Well, I mean, we did talk a little bit last time about open-handed forms being influential as well. And mm-hmm. most open-handed forms have weapons content and vice versa. So it's not invalid.
So we actually talked about the style of martial arts that I base this on, which is Bagua Zhang. And Bagua is about being able to use your positioning and your stepping in order to not get hit, but hit them. So there's a lot of circle walking and things like that to be able to take more than one opponent at a time and come back with some devastating counters. So in Bagua, there is the Bagua Broadsword, which is a sword that's usually as tall as you are, and you move it around your body and spin and use your body to get out of the way of the sword so the sword can do its thing. So that's the solo form that we do. Gemso, specifically, is a lot of counters and a lot of
what is that crunching? You chewing on Cheetos or something?
No, it's just a paper bag, and my cat just ran across the room. That's all.
Sorry, continue. Gemso, yeah. Bagua Broadsword, etc.
So with Bagua Broadsword, you have to get out of the way of the sword, otherwise you'll hurt yourself with your own weapon. Because of the momentum that has to happen in order for you to swing the sword without ripping your sword out of your shoulder out of socket, or busting up your wrist, right? So that's the solo form. But because Gemso has so many counterattacks and things like that, a lot of this now has to become more more useful than flowing, right? So what we've done is we've gone the HEMA path on that end. So you do a Bagua Broadsword, and then we do a HEMA kind of like crash course almost, or like intensive, because now we're dealing with different but the same stances, right? So you're looking at different stances from another person's point of view. So
right.
Looking at the manual for Fiore, for Agrippa, for pick Wickenauer scholar here that has a book on HEMA.
Is Wickenauer still a thing?
I don't know. I haven't been on it for a while. But
I should check that out.
I would say, yeah. But looking at Zweihänder techniques and all these things, and what most students notice is they already have done those techniques before.
That's what I was going to say with the European stuff, if you didn't say that. So good. Expound now.
Yeah. So a lot of the stuff becomes more, okay, this is more of a strong counterattack. This is more of more like a fight, an actual fight, not an actual lightsaber simulation, right? So this is when I can start teaching students how to grapple with their weapon, how to hit with their pommel. I can tell them how to disarm somebody. I can show them how to do a couple of techniques that are not enough in a single person form, but you need an uke or a demonstrating
a receiver of the technique, so to speak. Let me ask
so that's
something really quickly.
That's Gemso.
Let me just really, really quickly ask you about that, because first of all, I want to stay on Gemso, and I'll elaborate as well. But you said something that really made me think, and you said a lot of good things, so I'm trying to remember which one I grabbed. Sure. You were talking about how the stances and the stances in particular, like I noticed, like it's funny, a lot of European people of European ancestry, such as myself, you know, like I actually started in Asian martial arts, right? So it's funny, like you would think people of European ancestry might have some European martial arts training. I find that it's actually very few people of any ancestry have European martial arts training.
Right.
Unless Agreed. It's something along the lines of sport fencing or salat, something like that. But really, there's a lot of European martial arts, and they're present in all martial arts of the world as well, like front stance, which you might call forward bow, which you might call, depending on the position, you know, it's required for long point, or you might call it the lunge position.
Right.
You know, back stance in Shotokan is going to be the same thing as your basic fighting stance in most sword arts, in European sword arts, with 1 foot pointing to the side, 1 foot pointing forward, and a nice shoulder width or slightly wider orientation. And it's just, anyway, I forget the exact concept I wanted to delve into, but you saying that, it just made me think like how something Kay talked about a few episodes ago, which is just how universal the differences actually make the martial arts more universal in a way.
Right.
Sorry, I jumped on your bandwagon real hard there. I apologize.
The differences bring us together. That's definitely important.
That's not Jemso specific, but in Jemso, you go from Bagua in Chinese martial arts to Fiore, Italian martial arts. Like, okay, so mm-hmm. lo mein and spaghetti are not the only thing we can share between those two countries, right? Mm-hmm. And now you're learning them in America. You're a man of mostly Filipino descent, right? So these are just like, the saber martial arts is all of that stuff to me.
Yeah.
Just like mixed martial arts is that way without weapons. And so form five, to wrap this right back around the circle here, in order to incorporate, like you said, a crash course in HEMA, I don't think it's difficult to do that with any martial art. So if you come from primarily a HEMA background, it's not difficult to crash course some of the Asian weapons or weapons of the Americas, which consequently a lot of them are European rooted anyway.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else about Jemso specifically, Alan? Because I know you're kind of itching to get into Xi'an a little too.
Mainly a lot of the stuff I teach outside of the single person form are usually not allowed in other tournaments. Like there's a lot of,
It's important to put those in. Oh, that's the concept I was going to grab at. Okay. Thank you. Good. I'm glad you said that. is some of these things, like let's just say half swording, for instance, because that's something that I teach as part of a deeper Jemso curriculum, but not with a lightsaber. You can't grab the freaking lightsaber, right?
Right. Right.
But the concepts of how you distribute and redirect power, how you defend certain zones, coverage with the blade, where your hands belong in certain instances, those are all things that you can glean regardless of the weapon in your hand. And to layer those concepts in, you know, depending on the form, it also helps you spread that curriculum out, because I think sometimes people try to put all the stuff they know into one form and then they're like, oh, what do I do now? There's nowhere to go. Right. But to me, like if you focus on a couple things for each form, then later on, like my Jemso definitely reinforms my form one, my form three, my form two, right? And if you look in the Jedi path, Jemso is directly delineated from forms two and three. Well, what is two and three equal five? Right. But think about this. You take the basics of defense and footwork from form one, as well as the determination concept of not giving up once you start your attack or approach or whatever the case may be. then you add form four, and that offensive instinct, that aggression. What's one plus four? Five. Pretty easy that way, right? So now you start kind of playing with the forms in your mind. And to me, that's what forms five, six, and seven all represent, is that deeper layer of playing with the math, playing with the art of the forms, of martial arts. You're not going to start Absolutely. With form five, Absolutely. In my opinion. You could. That's up to you and your club and your teacher, whatever the case is. But to me, you're not going to start with form five. You're going to start with forms one and then some variation on two, three, and four, right? And yeah, then so, you can go from there.
Like what you're talking about, the basics of one with the
math of the form, of so to speak. That's kind of what I just loosely call
that
it.
That definitely works. But it's also, you know, if you don't study one, you can't get to four, which means that, so like your math example is actually also accurate in just how to learn this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
So for Gemso, especially because everybody wants to be Anakin Skywalker.
And they should. He's got the dopest fighting style, in my opinion. Right. I mean, he's the greatest swordsman the Force has ever seen.
Right. And so looking at a lot of the stuff, right?
Maybe Obi-Wan. Sorry. Maybe Obi-Wan might be. That might go to Obi-Wan. Anyway.
I'm going to have to say Dooku whooped him twice. Anyway.
Oh, you're right. Oh, that might go to Dooku. But Anakin beat Dooku. So MMA math,
go.
Man.
So,
MMA math.
it doesn't matter. Who is there in the moment? Which technique is that one person doing?
Who's got the belt now? Darth Vader. So it is Anakin. Right. It is Anakin.
So there you go. And then Luke beat him. So, so whatever. So when you're looking at a lot of this stuff, right, it you do have to take it with a grain of salt. Also, it's a story, and
that's the fun of it.
A good set of choreography tells a good story without having to use words, right? A good dance evokes emotion without having to use words. So even thinking about the character of Anakin Skywalker being the one that will deflect but overcome you with overpowering force is the equation for Gemso.
Oh, yeah? 100%. So, oh, I love it. I love the way you said that.
So that's kind of the thing. And if I am allowed to push up my nerd glasses here, every single practitioner of a light club or a basically the Tetsubo of lightsabers or a bigger than medium sized race in Star Wars has done, Gemso just because they have the strength to do it.
The Pong Krells and the
right. The
Wookiee Jedi of the universe and such.
Exactly.
Let me jump into Gemso myself because I'm frothing at the mouth, Alan. I'm just gonna be honest. I'm frothing to get into it. What you said about thinking about the character is 100% what got me into this concept of saber martial arts 22 years ago is reading Fight Saber, reading about all the forms, obviously form one,
right.
Like you go, I have to know form one, right? I have to create or understand this concept of this form one.
Right,
but
basics,
when I got to form five, I really did. I look at it and I go, oh, Anakin Skywalker. Oh my gosh. Right. It makes sense. The way they're describing this, it makes sense. The character that he's portrayed. And this was around the time of Attack of the Clones. Right. So, my friend and I were doing some choreography and we were doing it for a school talent show. Now on the side and in the dojo, I was just kind of secretly,
which everybody should do.
Yes. I agree. I agree.
Everybody 100%. Should just,
you
can
call it whatever you want.
Fight.
If, calling it choreography makes you feel like you're not doing martial arts. Well, that's your problem, first of all. But second of all, it's kata is the same thing. Call it kata, then call it velocities, call it whatever you want. But
I assure you,
you should do it.
If you start to play Battle of the Heroes, or you start to play the Duel of the Fates, everybody in that audience will cheer.
Yeah,
no matter what.
And that's what we were going for, and we won the talent show with it. But he didn't. I said this two episodes ago, I think. He was not a martial artist to start with. Right. Much of his fighting style was informed by things like pool and right. Just like being athletic. He was going to be the Obi-Wan character, and I was going to be the Anakin character. And this was around, oh gosh, like I said, this was around Attack of the Clones. Maybe it was like a Obi-Wan and Darth Maul. I think that's what it was. I had like a double bladed saber. I actually had an extra nice. Long broomstick that I put electrical tape on the ends of. And we gave him a broomstick that we cut down a little bit and put electrical tape all the way, like 3/4 of the way down on. We practiced Obi-Wan and Darth Maul. But then reading the article, I started to think about these other forms, Qui-Gon being form 4, et cetera. And Anakin Skywalker just to me was the absolute embodiment of the form that he was described as.
Right.
Aside from maybe Yoda and form 4. Or maybe Darth Maul in Form 7. But with Form 5, I identify with that character a lot. I've been that Anakin type, you know, it kind of pains me to say a little, but I'm a lot more like Anakin than I am like Qui-Gon, and I wish I was more like Qui-Gon.
so does Anakin.
Well, and that's me. You know, I'm the Qui-Gon wannabe, and it comes out as Anakin. And so in my fighting style, that is also the way I am, but the martial art I grew up in, which is Kenpo Karate, American Kenpo Karate, and the style I grew up in is very Americanized in the sense of like informed by just other martial arts as well. It's all counter offense. And all of the self-defense right. is based on counter offense or striking at the same moment or right as like preemptively striking against somebody that you know is about to attack you. So that is form 5. You are either going to put the end of your sword through them before they can finish their attack, or you're going to deflect that attack and send a worse one their way. If they use a knife, you use a sword. If they use a sword, you use a spear. If they use a spear, you use a gun. If they use a gun, right? You know what I'm saying? And that to me, that's Jem So versus Xian, which we'll talk a little about the reverse grip, but just in and out of itself is a little more, to me, you might disagree, a little more passive in its counter offense, a little more closer to form 3, a little more attack when the opportunity presents itself, but making the opportunity present itself a little more than you do in form 3. How do you feel about that?
So, Jem So, to quote Anakin Skywalker, I'm going to end this, right? He wants to end the fight.
Exactly.
And not have to deal with that person.
Yeah. Escalation of arms, as it were, until
right.
until you cut off the head, as it were.
Right. Yeah, yeah. So that is Jem So, and that is kind of the mindset of a lot of the techniques that we teach for Jem So. It's like, okay, there's no negotiation in this. This creates an opportunity for you to put the tip of your lightsaber in this.
Well, it's aggressive negotiations, right? I mean, right?
I mean,
we're using the characterization. We might as well go full bantha on it.
It's no longer negotiations at that point.
Yeah.
Right. It's not even aggressive negotiations. It just ends. Right. That's the idea behind.
That's Kenpo. And honestly, that's a lot of Chinese martial arts as far as the self-defense wing. Like, I could be speaking a little bit inaccurately here, but just the concept of Wing Chun, as I understand it, is all about the redirection and counter offense.
Right. So when we talk about Xian, it's the opposite of it. So when at Phoenix Saber, we look at it more like what is described in the article and in the Way of Jedi as a more defensive
right
and more deflective
And that's the specific example that is given most often is blaster bolt deflection. Mm-hmm. That's also given for Ceresu, but Shien being redirection, not just deflection. Mm-hmm. And
right.
since we're not going up against blaster bolts, you have to understand how that works with a sword.
Yeah.
And I do think, though it is often frowned upon, that working with the reversed grip or the Shien grip, as it's sometimes called, is helpful in that, because I think of the word Shien and the word shield comes to mind. Sure. So a lot of my Shien concepts come from shield work.
Sure.
And I will often use a reverse grip when I'm teaching Jarkai initially, just so that that person's using one hand as a shield. They're conceptually raising it and lowering it, moving it side to side as they would a shield. When you do a reverse grip, you're forced to do that. A standard foregrip doesn't require that same musculature and framework in your physicality. Oh my gosh, talk about pushing the nerd glasses up. Yeah. But with Jarkai, I like things like, and I don't mean to bleed too much into Form 6 yet, but I like things like the Spartan sword and gladius, or sword and spear. Gladius is Roman, but concepts are the same. The fighting style is informed by each other. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I'll even stick a super long blade in that offhand side so that you're almost forced to hold it in a reverse grip. And it doesn't always work. But I like to teach Shien with varied blade lengths and variation on both foregrip and reverse grip, because I like that concept of shield. But if you're teaching buckler, you might like to teach Shien with a foregrip and a shorter blade. If you teach things like buckler or rapier and dagger, I think Shien is a great form that those can sort of mold into, because that passive defensive counter offense is really present in those styles, in my opinion.
Absolutely. I mean, that's one way to have, you know, a shield with another blade where one is dedicated to defense, right?
Strictly a parrying dagger, so to speak. Yeah, which can also cut, but, you know, is opportunity strikes, right?
Well, most, I believe, and I could be wrong about this, I believe most parrying daggers are just like sharp tip and that's it.
You might be right about that. I'd be curious, anybody who's got a lot of experience with particularly European parrying daggers, because when you talk about things like tomahawk and knife, mm-hmm. first of all, that knife is not parrying a thing. So that's mm-hmm. it's not what it's used for. That's a topic for another day. It's always sharpened on one edge. So it's a different weapon.
It's an interesting thing that you pointed out with that, but we'll get to that in Form 6.
Yes, we will, actually. Yes.
Shien, so we talk about perseverance, and Shien is what we use for a cooldown.
Mm.
It's an interesting thing. Once I've taught a student the solo form for Form 1, the solo form for Form 2, the solo form for Form 3, and the solo form for Form 4. They do it from the beginning of Form 1 to the end of Form 4. And at that point, they're usually huffing and puffing. And, you know, they're especially because, like, the endurance form, right? Form 3 is right in the middle of it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot that has to go. After the longest form, which is Form 3, I have him do the most active form, Form 4, like the most physically like intense form. And then they go to Form 5 and they just want to die.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
So I agree. And that's the way Anakin fought, right? At the brink of physicality.
Mm-hmm. So at Form 5, we go through and we do our Form 5 Gemso, and then we end it with Shien, which is when they describe Shien in the articles and in the things, it just says, it basically is them putting a different emphasis on the start of the word, and it's a jian, and a jian is a Chinese straight sword.
Mm-hmm.
So what I've done for our xian solo form is teach a sword form from Wudang Mountain, which is basically a slow Tai Chi like form. So they can actually still swing their saber. They still have a little bit of things, but they are more mindful about their breathing. They're more mindful about getting to the right position from mm-hmm. the right way without having to jump to that position. They're actually using, you know, good technique yep. and deflection and relaxing into it. And then by the end of that form, they should be chilled out and relaxed,
yeah.
even though the form itself is about a minute and a half to 2 minutes, depending on how slowly they go.
Mm-hmm.
So for those of you that don't know, a 2 minute form is a long time.
Yeah, like, I agree.
Most forms are like 45 seconds.
Yeah. I was just filming myself the other night doing some forms. And yeah. I think the longest one was a minute and 10 seconds.
Yeah, so I think what we did, because we recorded some of our students doing it, and our Shicho form is super simple, but it takes about 2 minutes.
Right.
If you do the full amount of both sides of our Bokashi form, it's about a minute if you're doing it at speed. If you do our Suresu form, then you're looking at another 2 minutes out after that. So you've gone about 5 minutes of going before I ask you to do a, you know, a side flip or cartwheel or anything in a taru. And then there's like 90 seconds of intense sword work and rolling and jumping in a taru. So far you've been going for about 7 minutes. 8 minutes at this point.
Yeah.
And then there's about a minute to a minute and a half of gem. So you've been actively moving and trying to just
going on 10 minutes,
you know,
now.
Going on 10 minutes. And then you go for about a minute to 2 minute cool down.
Yeah.
Right. So that's 1 through 5 for us, in a single, session. If it's only you and that's all you can train is the forms, and to keep all this stuff, it's about 12 minutes of intensity, right? And then,
yeah.
And then the Jian form, right? That's much like in GMSO, there's a bunch of stuff that is hidden within the movement. So there's a lot of interpretation that has to happen for people to go, oh, it's from strike number one from Shicho. Oh, this is from a thrust.
We didn't even talk about, I can't believe we glossed over this. We didn't even gloss over it. Oh, there's so much to talk about. We blade manipulation is the characteristic of form five. I mean,
exactly.
In my opinion. And
exactly.
Talk about movements hidden within movements. There's always a blade manipulation movement hidden within movement. Talk about using other forms to inform this, the Jian in your case, or a longsword with a crossguard. Though you may not have a crossguard on your saber, informed by those movements and application of physical pressure, etc. Strength, again, force. Again, physical force is a characteristic of Jem. So, and in Xian, being able to redirect that. There's so much to talk about. Let's wrap up form five. Oh my God, I wish.
Sure.
So let's characterize note, really quickly. Sorry. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah. Small note in Xian, in Phoenix Saber's Shen version of Shen is actually the fact that we don't teach the reverse grip attacks in Shen. We teach the reverse grip attacks in Ataru.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So, like, when we do our attacks in Ataru, toward the very end of Ataru, we actually flip our grip to Shen. to mm-hmm. the
reverse script.
The reverse script. And then we actually do a lot of the stuff that we are doing in Ataru is just like, why am I doing this? This is just too athletic to do. And then you flip your grip and you're like, okay, I'm going to learn how to do it like this too. Yes. So that's the thing. But then we start the Xian form in a reverse grip. And we quickly show you how to go from a reverse grip to
I have that transition in a couple of my velocities and things as well.
Right. And then we also have I don't want to say a hidden form, but it's actually a more difficult form using a lot of the same principles, but it's less Xian, but more Jemso.
Okay.
In the practice of it. But still using the reverse grip with flipping to an orthodox grip. There's actually, it's kind of more of a form six form. So I would teach it at the end of form five before a student starts form six. Mm-hmm. And then it's up to them to decide whether or not it's form six or form five.
That makes any sense. It makes sense to me. If it doesn't make sense to you, hit us up. SaberMartialArtsFoundation@gmail.com. SMAOutreach@gmail.com. Before we take reverse grip and turn it into form 6/6B, right? Sure. Or 6A, whatever. Let's just characterize really quickly because we did that already for most of the other forms. For Jemso, we said Anakin Skywalker. Another example might be Plo Koon in some of the lore, was expressed to be a Form 5, particularly Jemso practitioner. Trying to
Commander,
think.
We're expendable. Not to me.
There are plenty of examples. So cool. Plo Koon is the man. He really awesome. Is awesome. And he was described as being very physically powerful, which is why Jemso suited him. You can tell. Dude, Jack Diesel. As far as Xian is concerned, I would say probably Plo Koon also, if he was a master of Jemso to the degree of Anakin, which he is described to have been, then he probably had some pretty good handle on Xian as well. Ahsoka, though she's also described as being more form 4 and 6, obviously, with two sabers, that she starts out very Xian, Xian Ataru mix, in my opinion. And then over time, I think actually in the Ahsoka series, I would say she's pretty much the embodiment of Xian.
Right.
So yeah, I think she's a good one to look at. Not just because she likes that reverse grip. And then I'm trying to, Darth Vader would be your non-reverse grip Xian practitioner. Obviously still Jemso. Obviously he's the master of lots of different saber practice, Ataru, Shicha, just a master, Makashi. But mm-hmm. I would say that a lot of his, that what we see on film, you could characterize as Xian.
Sure. Well,
and it makes sense given, like you said, a cooldown, somebody who's mm-hmm. more machine than man now, would appreciate the Tai Chi straight sword, so to speak.
Right. So that you know this, I'm not just a martial arts nerd, but I also like miniatures games. And one of the things that has come out is a game called Shatterpoint.
Oh, and yeah, I've seen this on the shelf.
Shatterpoint is a fun miniatures game that actually has Jedi in it. And because they have Jedi in it, they actually have combat stances in the game. And because they have combat stances in the game, guess what? Our forms are named in those things. So for Plo Koon, just so you know, he has Suresu and Jemso as his two combat stances.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, very interesting. Well, there you go. Uh-huh. And a good combination of Jemso with Suresu concepts would be equal Xian, would it not?
Yeah, and that's it. So everybody has their thing, and so far, all of the stuff that we've talked about has had a mention in that miniatures game, with those specific styles. So Anakin does have a gem so side, and he has Suresu side, because he also is, you know, Obi-Wan's apprentice. So he has a defensive side and a aggressive side, basically.
We have nerded out so hard on 4 and 5. I don't even know if we're going to make it to 7. Which actually might be okay, because I feel like, in a way, 4 and 7 maybe should be its own episode.
Well, that's a whole other story.
let's just say that. Let's just say we'll do 4 and 7 as its own episode. Let's sure. do 4 and 6 to finish this episode. And make it a holistic concept, because Form 6 also has two variations, like Form 7, but 7 is its own friggin' thing.
Each of these is its own friggin' thing, but yeah, I get what you're saying.
Well, yeah, especially 5, 6, 7, but yeah, 7, yeah. Oh man. Everybody knows that you want to practice Form 7, so we'll just make that its own episode, and we will indulge everybody's deepest, darkest desires, I promise. But Form 6 is
Form 6
huge, huge topic. Mm-hmm. We don't have time to do it all, but
yeah,
but man, whoo, everything in Form, everything we've talked about and more informs Form 6, because let's save Jarkai for a second. Mm-hmm. Jarkai at the surface meaning two sabers, but you could also interpret to include anything of the abstract variety, great saber or long saber, shoto, double saber or doubled or paired sabers, people who are interested in things like light whips and spears or pikes, in my opinion, that kind of falls somewhere in the Jarkai family. But Niman or Nyman or however anybody wants to pronounce it.
Leonard Nimoy.
Yes. Form 6, as it were, is the moderation form. And this is where all the concepts kind of come together. And in lore, after their initial training in like the initial 1 to 4 sort of forms, it seems like the majority, we'll say greater than 50% of Jedi, ended up focusing on Form 6. But it's also described as kind of being like detrimental to their fighting. Because
Jack of all trades, master of none.
Yeah. But it's the form that a lot of teachers fall into when they're fighting, because you're having to adapt to students, fellow teachers, maybe someone who's better than you and you're not trying to look like a buffoon, or maybe different students that you're working with, different shape sizes, experience levels. You have to kind of draw from all your experiences, and if you don't really have a Form 6 in your repertoire yet, I would say don't stress about it, but man, really focus on your Form 1, and that'll inform everything else. Please really focus on your Form 1. But Form 6, Alan, like, I think you're the one that gave me that phrase, the teacher's form. Talk about it a little bit.
Yeah, so when we do any of our techniques in Form 1 through 5, it's all in preparation to be created into this amalgam form, basically.
A balanced swordsman.
Yeah, which is meant to be used, you know, in whatever, you know, your definition of balance is, right? So when we go through and we do Niman, there is no actual Niman form, is basically what I'm trying to say.
That's the way I see it as well.
There is... Can you do all the other forms? Hold on one second.
No problem. While he's holding on, the way that he just said, you know, it's all the other forms. When I'm practicing Niman myself, I will often go from like form one through form five and then into potentially Jarkai right there. If I have another Sable right there, I can grab it. But I will just kind of flow maybe on a heavy bag, or maybe I'll do my form one through five kata or some velocities, and then right. I'll hit that bag. Alan, sorry, while you were dead spacing, I was just kind of describing that when I personally, because you said there's no form six form, I do the same right. thing. My form six version of my form would basically be what you described earlier about going from like form one kata through form five kata, or maybe some velocities in each form without stopping, though, like, you know, no transition. Right. Or what I really like to do for form six is after I've practiced some rudiments and velocities and things in other forms, is I'll go to the heavy bag. I'll grab an action flex saber. And sometimes a polycarbonate, but I really like the way the foam sabers interact with the heavy bag. And I'll grab an action flex saber or two and then hit the bag freestyle in forms one through five style.
Right.
So I think I sent you guys a video of that a long time ago in the old Enclave chat, the oldest Enclave chat.
Right.
And maybe I'll post that video as I think I have it somewhere on my phone as part of this episode content.
Sure.
And you'll kind of see what I'm talking about, but it's just a ramp up. In other words, going from form one through five without stopping your brain or your body. And that's just how I practice it. None of my students, no, that's a lie. One student has reached form six so far. None of my other students have reached form six yet. And she is not my student right now. She's got a life that she's living hard right now, and I'm all about that. But Becky's the only one who has even tickled any form six at all. And that's because she's had a sword, a stick, or nunchucks in her hand since she was like 6 years old, 8 years old. So,
which is awesome.
Yeah, I know. I know. I tell the kids who come to martial arts that I'm like, man, while other kids are like sitting at home worried about their homework right now, like you're in this padded room where you can crash into everything and you're swinging deadly weapons into space. Right. Like, how awesome is it that your parents signed you up for this? Why are you complaining about coming here of all places?
Exactly.
Yeah. But that's form six, is it not? Like, to me, that's what form six should get that energy out of your students. Even if they don't know that that's what they're doing or that's what they're seeing, you doing it as a teacher should bring that energy out of them. The fact that you can transition from one student's style to the other student's style and defend or offend against that and let them see and feel what it's like to fight a well-rounded person. That is a big part of form six, not everything, but a big part of it.
Right.
As far as educating or how you came up with it, it sounds like, you know, pretty much everything before and kind of the spillover becomes form six.
Kind of. So, there is no – it's kind of like there is no war in boxing, say, right, to cross fandoms here.
Yeah.
But there is a form six kata or movement or dulan that we do. And you've actually pointed out a lot of the things that I would teach. Form six is when I start to teach saber staff. Form six is when I start to teach Jarkai. So that Suresu form that you learned all those years ago, now we're going to do it with two swords instead of one. Now we're going to learn, because there is no like tiger twin hook sword of lightsaber.
That'd be messed up. Please don't make one. That's not a saber we want to see.
As of yet, not really a lightsaber. It would probably be one of those Praetorian guard weapons, right?
I will give you this. I would not hate a cross guard design that had a polycarbonate D hook or something of some sort.
Yeah, yeah.
Or just a finger guard that was polycarbonate. I would not hate that. I would not hate it.
Right.
It would not be the least believable thing. Anyway, please don't make a tiger twin hook saber.
But that's when we start dealing with more exotic weapons. So, light whips and things like that to teach Bagua bullwhip to go through and do some of the rope dart stuff that we talked about.
Yeah.
But a lot of the techniques.
Nunchuck still, training might be something you're interested in, especially if you want to teach paired sabers, because personal opinion.
Or if you want to be Duck Dodgers, the 23rd and a half century.
I didn't say nunchuck saber. I just said nunchucks to help inform your saber, I should say. Yeah. Because I personally find it easier to do two nunchucks, one in each hand, than to do a single nunchuck. I told you I'm learning a traditional nunchuck form right now. Single chuck, and I barely switch hands ever. It is the most difficult thing I've ever done in 32 years of martial arts. It is wild how difficult I think it is. But double nunchuck, not as difficult to me. Yeah.
So.
Combat cold cuts. But I think nunchuck's valuable for paired saber because it teaches you a lot about not cutting yourself.
Of course. Yes. So again, when we go into that, it's all of the fundamentals that you learn with single saber now translated into exotic weapons.
Yeah.
So we'll learn saber pike. We'll learn all these things. A lot of stuff doesn't work with a lightsaber, right? So like if I were to block with the center of, I mean, it didn't work out for Darth Maul. Block with the center of your saber stack, right? That won't work. So a lot
maybe
of
that's
things
the name of this
be...
episode. It didn't work out for Darth Maul. Oh, right. That's a good.
One. I don't know. I feel like that sounds like our Form 7. It didn't work out for him. But anyway, blocking with your hilt and going through and doing some stuff, especially with the longer weapons, makes it a little bit tougher to do.
Quick caveat. I had success. Man, I just got to give Century Martial Arts another shout out for Action Flex, because they make these Action Flex staffs. I think it's okay to call
them. My teacher makes those.
Yes. And they're incredible. And they used to make them in varied lengths. I don't know if they still do. I haven't gotten a Century catalog in a couple years now, but they used to make them in a few different lengths. And one thing I will say about teaching saber staff as people, I hate that word. That's just personal opinion. Don't let it change your vernacular. Double bladed lightsaber is make the hilt longer and the blades shorter. It will stop you from blocking with the center. Believe it or not, I think it stops you from blocking. But I taught the kids double bladed saber. I say the kids, anybody in my class, but it was mostly kids and teenagers. Couple of 20 somethings, but they're still kids. And sure. I would teach with the Action Flex, maybe in like a 6 or 7 foot total length, depending on, you know, which size I could get that, you know.
Right.
And that would give them about 12 to 18 inches of blade.
Right.
Because they had these little, I call them joints, but they're not. But these perfect like areas where the foam didn't exist. And it made two blades and a hilt, basically. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, go to centurymartialarts.com. Not a sponsor. This is not a paid promotion.
Not yet.
Although one day, hey, Century, reach out to us. We love you. Instagram all the time.
You got us on Insta. It's all good.
Not even just. I mean, we talk about these stuff because they work, not because we're being paid to tell you.
Right.
Anyway, it gives you 4 to 5 feet of hilt and 12 to 18 inches of blade, which is plenty to block, strike, defend, and learn how that particular style of weapon moves about without cutting yourself. I mean, it's form six to me is like form six, especially Jarkai and quote unquote exotics would be a lot about mitigating personal damage. Especially personally inflicted damage.
Right, exactly.
You know, pikes and spears, that's another day in and of itself too. That is its own discussion as well. And maybe that's a swords and sabers discussion, but pike and spear fall in this category as well. They're very popular in the tournament circuit right now. Most of what you see in the pike category is more like a greatsword or more like a Nodachi type sword, where you have maybe 40 to 50% of it is hilt, maybe 60%, and the rest is blade. And we're talking like 3 feet of blade sometimes. That's not a spear. That's not a pike. If we really wanted to talk about pikes, we're talking 7 feet and over. But look, let's just say in the saber world, little tiny blade at the end of a very long hilt. Okay. Right. For me, that hilt minimum is 4-5 feet and over. And then my hilt is, again, maximum 18 inches. It's like on a double-bladed saber, I might go as far as 24 inches of blade on either end, depending.
Right.
I might.
Right.
You know, if I've got maybe 6 feet of saber, 7 feet of saber, I can deal. But with a spear like that, I want a ton of hilt. And I'm staying the hell away. And I'm poking holes in you from a distance or nipping at your wrists and shoulders and knees from a distance so that the only way you can score on me is to hit my hilt.
Right.
And I'm not going to let you. I'm going to cut you first. Right. A lot of our
tournaments, that's actually the thing, right? We actually don't allow, because of the nature of lightsabers, right. And accepted media, we're also looking at, okay, what would that look like if this were actually a lightsaber? And most of it is going to be like, your hilt got busted. You know what I mean? So
that's sort of my argument though. And I know you're not disagreeing. This is just me coming at it from the person who wants to put the martial arts of it above everything else, which is if you decided that the spear is your weapon, then you've got to deal with it being a spear. You can't decide that now a spear is a great sword.
Right.
Just because you can't defend with it the same way you did before.
Right.
So then, well, how would you... Because in our SMAF gear guidelines and saber glossary, and of course, all of our clubs and schools, they're allowed to do whatever they want with their rules. These are just guidelines that we've come up with to help people in our organization and out of it as well, if they need to understand some things and inform their own rules a little bit if they're new to this. But also, like, you know, people like Courtney, they've just cross-referenced things sometimes too, like... to me, don't call it that. It's just, don't call it that. If you're going to use a different thing, just call it a different thing. And it's okay to just call it a different thing. I don't understand why. And if you're afraid of maybe some safety concerns with, honestly, again, the martial artist in me is like, dude, this is the thing you signed up for. You've got to deal with all of the concerns. You've got to deal with safety. You've got to deal with technique. You've got to deal with correct definitions and things. Oh man, I could ride this forever. That's why I said this should be its own episode. But in tournament sense, it's pertinent because we have a lot of people probably listening who go to a lot of tournaments and they're setting themselves up in a way. And look, you have to play by the rules of whatever you're going to go for. And you have to play the percentage game as well. Like if you really are there to win, then you might have to change the way you define some things. But if you're there to be a martial artist, like if I was showing up to somebody else's tournament and within the rule sets I was capable of doing so, I would make sure my spear looked like a freaking spear. It would have 12 to 18 inches of blade on about 5 to 6 feet of hilt. And I would probably be trying to poke holes in people. And look, man, again, if you're worried about things like we talked about this last week, if you're worried about things like stabbing or whatever, that's up to you and your organization and your group of people to address. I can't tell you the right answer. I can tell you my answer. My answer is you allow techniques as long as everybody understands what happens when they lose control and that they don't lose control in the first place.
All right.
But yeah, man, form six. Whew. Hot soapbox just rode by. Sorry about that. Mm-hmm. I think this is where fantasy and reality have to sort of crash, though, because it's important to all of us that we keep the fantasy of it, that we learn the cool stuff. We learn the double-bladed saber. We learn the spears and the two-handed. It's awesome. We should all want to learn it.
Right. And the thing about that, too, is like there are other ways to fight, and you can do the other ways to fight. Anybody can do the other ways to fight. You can practice it. There's a ton of schools that's what they do. So if you're complaining about something not being realistic, first of all, it's a lightsaber. You know?
Every time we say that, I love it more.
Right. So yeah. We have to really look at, you know, what rule sets apply and which ones feed us creatively, right? Yeah. So, and that's really all it is. This is all creatively helping us, hopefully creatively helping us in ways where we can inform other ways of fighting. We're not just like it's only ever a katana. It's only ever, you know, a spear, that sort of thing.
The only thing that it only ever is, if you're doing what we do, is a lightsaber. So all of the other things, at the end of the day, if you think to yourself, I'm doing this because I'm in love with that lightsaber, then it all makes sense. From a martial perspective, a fanboy perspective, fangirl, whatever. Mm-hmm. Woo! Neemon, Form 6. I could definitely... We got to go. I mean, it's just... If we don't, we're going to be here forever. Form 6 practitioners, let's, again, characterize the form. Coleman Trevor, rest in peace. Poor Coleman. Probably your worst example of a good Form 6 practitioner. Coleman Trevor is the reason that Obi-Wan Kenobi is on the Jedi Council in episode 3, because poor Coleman Trevor bites the dust in about 6 seconds or less in Attack of the Clones. So he gets capped by Django in the Geonosis arena. And unfortunately for him and Form 6, he's the person that they give examples of in many instances. But I think that they give that example to explain the ineffectiveness of getting lazy about being a jack of all trades. Maybe because 60% of the Jedi were Form 6 practitioners at the height of the Republic. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, that's just average. That's just average. And Coleman Trevor is the embodiment of the average. It's like you can't go into a war, we'll say, just average and not be a casualty. You have to want to be better. And if you're going to be a Form 6 practitioner, use Coleman Trevor as a a warning, you know. Don't train like Coleman. Train more like Asajj Ventress, we'll say, would be a good, great example of a Form 6 practitioner. Form 2-6, we'll say. Form 2-4-6. 2 and 4, what's that make? 6. So who else you got for Form 6? Any variation on it? Who would you say, even if it's not in lore per se?
Kit
Fisto, that's another one that I just thought of. He's characterized as Shicho, but we have seen him use Jarkai to great effect.
Yeah. I would say, like, as far as Form 6 is concerned, like, if we look at the Jedi that are in, I would go with probably, like, so Luminara is Shien specifically, but the Form 6 practitioner, in my mind, they're like few and far between, but the one that has a name that I can think of is Quinlan Vos.
Oh, really? Quinlan, I didn't even Vos think about is, Quinlan. One of my favorite characters, too, of course. Everybody well, likes Quinlan.
The reason you don't think about him is because he makes you forget.
Really quickly, Dark Disciple. We already said Asajj Ventress. Now we just said Quinlan Vos. The novel Dark Disciple, I read that entire novel as my first daughter was being born in the bed next to me in the hospital room there. And I cried like a little baby until she was born. I finished it like an hour before she was born. And then after she was born, I cried like a little baby again because I was holding her. But man, that book... Let's just put the Form 6 discussion aside for Three Mississippis. That book is incredible, and I recommend everybody read it. Okay. Yeah, Quinlan Vos. That's interesting.
Well, mainly because his style is whatever works.
Yeah, 100% right? that. 100% that. So, and he also has that thing that Cal Kestis has, maybe another example of a good Form 6 practitioner, especially in the second game. He's got, what, four different... saber stances. But he's got that telemetry thing where he can touch something and sort of gather the experience of another. And that would definitely inform your fighting style.
Yeah. Psychometry is a whole.
Psychometry,
a whole
not telemetry. Yeah. Wrong word. Thank you. Excuse me, I burped.
Psychometry is more.
Psychometry.
More along exactly what you just said.
Yes. Okay. Okay, Alan, we got to go, but Form 6, if you are somebody who's in charge of a program, maybe coming up with your own curriculum, maybe starting fresh but want to do the same, I would say make your Form 1 awesome, learn how to do a Form 2, then go back to Form 1 and make it awesome again.
Yep.
Keep your Form 2 practice. Learn about defense and offense, a.k.a. Form 3 and 4. By that point, it shouldn't even matter if you're really, like, got a lot of these extra forms and things. By that point, I would say you have enough to develop your own sense of a varietal form, a Form 6, if you will, a teacher's form. So, again, if you're starting fresh or you want to create your own curriculum – maybe Form 6 is like not one of the first things you should worry about, but definitely solidifying 1 and 2 so that you can inform the succeeding ones. And then 6 is kind of just, it'll figure itself out and you'll be able to figure it out a little better from there. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that.
Let's call it for now. We're going to have to do Form 7 all on its own. I would say next week, but maybe we'll put another episode in between. So check out the links for all kinds of things that I forget about now. Definitely strategic, definitely Strategicon and Saber Mayhem. I said I might put in a video link if I can. Alan, let me give you a little homework, Alan. either gather... and or maybe have you or Kenny do some filming of Forms 4, 5, and 6, some of the holocron type stuff. And maybe in a few weeks here, we can do a little bit of Form 4, 5, and 6 holocron supplement. You know, I'm no rush, but we'll talk about it in the next few days here and get a little plan going and... see if we can come up with some material for some people to hopefully see a little bit of what we're talking about. And also in the future, keep your eyes and ears peeled for episodes containing content on earth weapons that inform, that do exactly what we talked about in this episode, inform our other forms. I've said that word a lot. It's starting to sound like not even English anymore. So I think it's time, Alan. Strategicon videos, Instagram at SMA Foundation. If you have not tapped into that yet, what are you waiting for? Check out Saber Martial Arts on YouTube. All of the podcast episodes in the last 2 months are up there now in audio form, as well as supplemental videos, tournament footage, yada, yada, yada. Actually, years worth of content that you know, go check it out. Send us messages and bring your own saber.
Bring your own saber. This party's over.